Hey, welcome to the List Film Podcast for the new listeners. Yeah, we're a weekly podcast where we pick a film topic and then we discuss it. We discuss and list our top five picks, whether it's actors, films, directors, best pets in movies.
Oh, we should do that.
We haven't done that yet, so yeah. And it's usually four of us, but Kevin is sick, so he's got some sort of he's got SARS or something.
Wow!
So he's out just for this week, though. He'll be good for next week. Yeah.
Okay. So it's that.
Hell yeah!
Yeah. So it's usually four of us, and I'm one of the hosts, Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Adam Scott.
And today we're joined by a special guest. Yeah. Who is it?
It's Blaine Weaver.
Yeah. That's right. There it is. And tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm a hell of a guy.
It's true, I can vouch for that.
I'm from Shreveport, Louisiana, which is a beautiful, beautiful town. No, I'm a filmmaker. I'm a writer, director, actor type, and here to talk about my movie 6 Month Rule, which opens June 1st in New York and June 8th other places.
And it's going to open theatrically, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're doing kind of a limited theatrical, one of those things where we see how everything's going after the first month and see if we extend or, you know, we just go to VOD, which is going to be awesome too, because then it's available for everyone nationwide and people can watch it on their television sets.
I'm really liking the VOD.
Yeah.
Are you guys liking it?
Well, I like VOD a lot. Yeah. I can't remember the last one I watched on video on demand first, but there were some. Maybe The Innkeepers, I think, was the last video on demand I watched.
Oh, okay.
Is everybody okay? Are you all right?
Yeah. You fall?
I think I'm good.
This whole mic thing on your right, it's freaking you out, dude.
Yeah, it's messing with my chi.
Yeah. And I'm really liking video on demand. The first movie I saw, I think, was Red State, and I really enjoyed the fact that I was able to, you know, just... And it's funny because we actually had a party, and then we're like, hey, let's watch Red State. And then I thought, I don't know how it's going to work out. It's really loud here. And then everybody just shut the fuck up. And we just... It's great.
And, like, I'm... Obviously, you know, you want people to go see the movie in the movie theater, you know, if you can. But, like, we were totally planning on doing this whole, like, day and date kind of thing where we spend money on the theatrical at the same time that it comes out on video on demand so you get the most bang for your buck. But... It's a rigged game, and I'd like to poke some holes in this theory because people are like, are you going day and date? Are you going day and date? The only way that works is if the distributor of a video on demand owns the theater that you're playing in. So Landmark, right, is part of Magnolia, I think. If I'm getting the names wrong, forgive me. You know what I mean. One of those guys owns another thing, and so they do day and date all the time or do the sneak peek, blah, 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 because if they lose money on the theatrical, it's – just their money.
Yeah, yeah.
But so we're going to do that. And, like, you know, we're not with Landmark or any of those other big companies. And they're like, no way will they even entertain a day and date. You need a 60-day window between theatrical and video on demand, which I thought was funny. Because, you know, we thought it was this new model. And it is a new model, but it's only mini studios that can do it.
Yeah.
If you have a distribution arm and you have a VOD arm, then you can do it. Anyways, I just felt kind of misled.
Yeah.
Is it Limley? Are they the ones with
Limley's are still independent, but like purely independent. Okay. Like, you know, you could four wall there or they'll take independent films.
Because they just had a bunch of Magnolia features like out early. A bunch of stuff that's not even out yet they had for a week this last week.
Interesting. Well, maybe you're poking holes in my theory there, Scott, but I won't stand for it. I don't know. I don't know what their connection is. I know that... Limley, when we talked to them, we're like, if you're going on video on demand, you can't play here.
That's a bummer. But you are opening at Limley, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So we've got a 60-day window right now. We're hitting all these cities, L.A., New York, Dallas, Denver, Shreveport, Louisiana.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh.
Which is, you're from Louisiana, right?
Correct? That's right. It's my hometown. That's where we shot the movie. My executive producer and my producing partner are all from there. So it's going to be great going back home and... You know, letting all the people who worked on the movie are going to come out and see it for the first time. So it's really going to be fun.
How was it? Was it the first thing you filmed in your hometown?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was amazing. Like it was like we put up all the talent in one of these hotel casino kind of things.
Okay.
So we could all stay together because a couple of years ago, shooting the movie W, what's his name?
Oh, Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin got tasered in a bar.
Oh wow.
By a cop.
Yeah, wow.
I've heard this story.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember this.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, here's the thing, you know, about actors. Sometimes they talk and they're obnoxious. Here's something you know about Shreveport, Louisiana. They don't like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it wasn't strange for me to walk into a bar where there's a bar fight going on, blah, blah, blah. But we wanted to stay all together with the actors so that I could kind of keep an eye on them.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'm kind of the enforcer.
Yeah.
No, but it was amazing. So I was staying in this really nice hotel when I didn't have to be because my parents live right down the street. But I'd come home from a long day shooting and walk into this really great hotel room with a great view and be like, oh, I'm shooting my movie. I'm such a grown up. And then I'd look and my mom will have done my laundry and had a little post-it note on top. It said, love you. Hope it's a good day. I'm like, oh my God. I can't. I'm not grown up at all.
And then you have the movie that's right now. It's on Netflix streaming, which is Weather Girl.
Weather Girl, yeah.
Actually, I believe you have, technically, don't you have two movies on streaming
right
now?
I do have two movies on
streaming.
Look at that. My first film, good research. Good research. My first film is a Uber indie called Outside Sales, which is a broad comedy kind of thing that about salesmen. And I think it's very funny. And it's on Netflix. Check it out.
So your first IMDb credit, I guess, but I'm sure you've done a lot more things, but your first IMDb credit for writing was Manic.
That's right. That was my first script that I wrote. Yeah.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Don Cheadle, right?
Don Cheadle, Zooey Deschanel, and Eldon Henson.
How was that experience? Because that was an independent movie, right?
Yes, it was. It was, my roommate and I were both actors and we wanted to write something for us to act in. I did this really not great Western for TNT where I played Matt Damon's brother. And I was like 17, 18 years old. And Damon was writing Good Will Hunting at the time. And like I read drafts of it. I just thought it was the coolest thing. And he's writing it and, you know, he's going to make it, blah, blah, blah. Wow. And I was fully inspired by that. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to write my own thing. And then we're going to raise money. I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. Anyways, my roommate was this guy, Michael Bacall. And he's a great writer, and I'm no slouch myself. And we wrote this movie, and a director came on who was really interested in making it, and we put it out there, and IFC brought in money, and the only caveat was I couldn't play the lead, so I bumped to a smaller part. Joseph Gordon-Levitt took the lead.
Which is not a bad thing.
No, and he's really good in it, too, which is good for him, because I would be upset if he had messed up. No, but it was great, and it was like it was a huge learning experience for me, and I got to work with those amazing people. Michael Bacall, you might know him better as the writer of Scott Pilgrim Saves the World or 21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's gone kind of the studio way, and I'm over here making indies and stuff, but it was a real success story, that movie.
Now, how was it? Had you directed before that? Before Manic? Before you?
Manic, I did not direct.
Had you directed anything before that?
Nope.
Okay. So I was going to ask you how that feeling is about like somebody else directing your writing.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sucks. I like having control. Yeah. But I came to this as an actor. You know, I became writing because I wanted to act in something. And then when I had other directors doing my writing, didn't feel good. And so I wanted to do that. So I would always rather see it all the way through. Obviously, as a writer, that's not always going to happen. And sometimes I like it better than others, you know. Mm-hmm. But I do like to see a project from the very beginning all the way through to the end if I can.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a really cool job. I'm a lucky guy to have gotten to do it a couple of three times.
Yeah, yeah. And how are you liking, you know, directing and writing? Is it easier because you could just rewrite on set, or is there a lot of rewriting on set? Or
I don't go back into my trailer and you know, hack away at the keyboard and bring out new pages. Normally we work it in the scene and we'll change it right on the day and, you know, have a good scripty there who's taking notes and stuff. But especially with 6 month rule, where I'm also an actor in it, it's very organic. We're all playing the scene and trying to make it better. And I feel very much like in theater, like when you're working with a new play where it's not Shakespeare yet. And so everybody's open to it getting better, and an actor saying, this just doesn't feel right. This seems like it could be smoother. And everybody working together to make a better movie or a better project. That's how we worked on 6 month rule, at least.
Oh, nice. And then you also wrote Honey 2. Is that right?
Yes.
Now, the question there is that, A, it's a sequel, and it's a dance thing. I'm looking at you. I don't see you as, like, the dance type.
How do you mean that, sir? I actually...
Get a couple more beers in. I'm
totally, totally lied my way into that job. I had a buddy call me and say, somebody's about to call you. I want you to tell them that you're from New York and that you are a dancer. I'm like, what kind of dancer am I? He's like, I don't know, street or something. Street dancer? That's what I am? And he told me that they were looking for a writer for a sequel to Honey. So I rented Honey, and I wrote Honey 2. But I think I can fairly say this. Not one word that's in the movie was actually mine. They had a dialogue guy who came in and did rewrites, whose name I can't remember, but is on the movie. And so... very little of the actual finished product sounds like Blaine Weaver.
Now, question on that is how do you feel about getting, especially a lot of studio movies? There's a guy that comes in and rewrites you. How do you feel about that? Like,
it's tough because usually I am that guy. Most of my jobs are punch ups, and so it's very difficult to be punched up by somebody else.
Yeah.
For me, because that's what I'm good at. I'm much better at dialogue and character than I am about arc and structure. And basically for that movie, what I did was I built it, and I built it very quickly because they needed it, you know, in a day or two, a week or two. And I did that, and then they had somebody else, you know, kind of give the color to it. And I'm more of a color guy than I am a beats guy. So it's weird because it's like it doesn't look at all like the thing that you wrote, but that's the studio system. And it's just, it's inherent in it. This is the first project where I've actually felt that way, where I've actually been like, wow, that's not at all what I wrote.
Yeah.
So it's weird, but like you can't complain too loudly because it's not my movie. I was hired to do a job. Hopefully they were pleased with what I did. And, you know, I certainly would rewrite other writers if I was directing them. But I've never directed anybody else's script. But when I do, I will rewrite you.
That's pretty cool. And then you're also the new voice of Peter Pan?
Yes, I am. It's a weird career I've had. When I try to pay my taxes, it gets really confusing.
Wow.
There's
a lot of slash.
Slash. I get a lot of W-2s, a lot of them, but they're mostly for like 85 cents, so don't think that I'm bragging here. I did a movie called Return to Neverland like 10 years ago, and it's the sequel to Peter Pan. Which was really cool. I mean, who doesn't want to be Peter Pan?
Yeah.
And I've gotten to play Peter Pan and Superman in my career, which I kind of feel like that's it. I can just kind of retire.
Yeah.
If I can get a James Bond in there someday, that would really be the capper. But no, they keep calling me back. You know, they keep making video games, and I just did this Kinect game that's really fun, and like, the future is crazy, you guys. The video games can see what you have on, and... So there were several days of me recording, nice hat. Oh, you changed your T-shirt.
Wow.
Oh, blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's intense. But, like, what a great job. And Disney's been really good to me.
Did they have you record, I'm unable to do that, Dave?
No, they didn't. That's Captain Hook's voice, actually.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
I can't do a Captain Hook impression. I came this close to trying to do the voice. And thank God, one more beer and I would have done it. And I keep going off mic. Sorry, guys. I'm trained with this. I should know better than that.
How does that, because as an actor, you're kind of like used to like moving around and kind of using the space. But doing voiceover, you're stuck in front of the mic. So how is that different?
Well, I look like a complete idiot. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Like I move around and, you know, I look really stupid. I look really stupid.
Well, I feel like everybody does. I mean, I just think of Robin Williams doing the
Aladdin.
Genie from Aladdin. Yeah. And he was pretty all over. I mean, he's all over the place in general. So trying to contain him in front of a microphone seems
it's
a bit much. So you're in good company.
You do lots of grunts and stuff like that. Like we sword fight a lot in Peter Pan movies. So there's lots of and man, I look like such an idiot jumping around in there. I can't believe I'm saying this on a recorded interview.
These things happen. At least you have an excuse. You're bringing someone else to life. We're just being ourselves when we sound silly on the podcast.
Yeah.
True.
That's true. We sound horrible sometimes.
Thanks, Ricardo.
Yeah. And then, so our stream of the week, by the way.
Weather
Girl. Will be Weather Girl.
Yes, which is very good.
Check it out. Check it out on Netflix.
Thanks for checking it out, guys.
And you could find the link to that on our website. And then you could probably find a lot of our guests' movies on Amazon. So if you're going to go buy his movies on Amazon, click through our link.
And then
you're buying his movie and helping us.
The video on demand going to be when the movie comes out? What is it? Can they find it through your website for 6 month rule?
Absolutely. We're not sure. Film Buff is our distributor, but it could be through. You can get streaming through iTunes or Netflix. We're not really sure what that is, or I don't really know how video on demand works, to be honest with you. So we'll see. But I'll get all the information, and it'll be on the Facebook site. I always forget to tell people, follow the movie on Twitter or Facebook. Well, yeah, it's a 6 month rule is the name of the movie. And it's going to be great.
And is there a website for the...
There is. It's 6monthrulemovie.com.
And then is it 6 with the number or with the letters?
Very good. You're very good at this. It's the 6, the number.
Nice.
Yeah.
So 6, the number, month rule, the movie.
No, the 6monthrulemovie.com. Man, why did I make it so complicated? I'm sorry.
I've seen way more complicated websites.
Yeah. Also, too, when you get into the dash, the movie.
Yeah. And then, oh, so no it's like dashes.
Underscore.
Yeah.
So backslash. Yeah. Forward slash.
But yeah, so check out go to the website and then you'll find the Twitter and I'm sure there's a Facebook page, right?
Oh, there's all kinds of pages. We're all over the social networking sites.
Just look.
Yeah. We're represented.
Yeah. So check that out. And again, Weather Girl. Netflix stream of the week.
Yeah, Weather Girl, Trish O'Kelly, Patrick J. Adams from Suits, who's also in 6 month Rule, actually. Mark Harmon, John Cryer, Jane Lynch. It's a great movie, says the guy who made it.
So check
it out. I had no involvement in making the movie. I thought it was great. My roommate enjoyed it also. She was a little upset that Blair Underwood wasn't in it more.
Everybody's upset. I'm upset that Blair Underwood isn't in it more. He's kind of an awesome dude.
That was her only complaint about the movie. Not enough Blair Underwood.
I agree, is all I can say.
It's like she had a fever and the only cure was more Blair Underwood.
That was the only cure.
So she's still sick. All right, so should we get into the list? Is there any movies you guys want to talk about? Did you guys saw this weekend? Anything on video?
I saw Chimpanzee.
Chimpanzee.
Was it? It was like a regular documentary, kids documentary on animals.
So you cried?
So there's no chimpanzees throwing feces?
They, touch their butts and smell it and stuff, like that video.
Like
and they're like, laughing.
I hope they laughed just like
that. It's a Disney documentary, right?
It's Disney, and it's Jane Goodall put it on or something. It's about one baby chimp that's, like, going through life.
Is his name Caesar?
His name's Oscar. But can't you use the same letters? No, there's no O in Caesar. Never mind. No. It made sense in my head. Never mind.
That's
where
most things make sense to me.
Me too.
And fine.
But
in
like, was it like penguins good? Like that was good, right?
I
don't like penguins, but penguins. I mean, I like the documentary was good.
Why don't you like penguins?
I don't know. They just don't fly.
What have they ever done to you?
It's their beady eyes. He doesn't trust them. It's because of the wrong trousers. That's I can understand not trusting penguins because of the wrong trousers because that penguin is devious.
Also, too, like chimpanzees. If we're hard up for, if it's like post-apocalyptic world,
don't
we could train chimpanzees to fight.
I thought you were going to say something else.
No. But
what did you say?
You don't want to know.
Have taken a turn to the dark side.
We always go there. I just didn't think it was going to be 18 minutes in that we were going to go there. But,
boom. I already said it.
And I feel like penguins, you couldn't train penguins to attack, I feel. They're too, nice.
Clearly, you never saw Old Dogs.
No,
Williams, because those penguins attacked.
Or Batman Forever.
No, yeah,
Batman
but
Returns.
See, they didn't really attack as much they strapped bombs on them.
That's true.
See?
They were just little sadistic.
A penguin with a bomb, I mean, that's probable cause as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I guess you guys are right. So you liked it?
Tim Allen did the voice of it. And you know what he did?
You lost me. He lost me.
He goes...
Nobody.
They have good power tools. And I was like, aw, Tim Allen. Oh. You did it.
He's like,
you
what?
Did it.
A little callback. He's like, it's on DVD. Check it out.
Tim Allen's no Morgan Freeman. That's all I got to say.
It's true.
And anything else you saw? What else?
No, I just saw that.
I saw Avengers again for the second time.
I saw it for the third time.
Yeah. Wow.
It was fun.
I'm so upset that I have not gone to see it yet. I actually had a big talk with my girlfriend yesterday because I'm like, you know what? You should have gone and seen Avengers with me when I wanted to go. Because now I haven't seen it. Now I'm really busy with the movie and I don't have time to. And I blame you.
That's so understandable.
I think so too. And then she didn't agree.
Now, how does your girlfriend feel? What if you got like 2 hours free and you go see it without her? Is she the one who's going to get upset?
She'd be fine with that. But the problem is it has to be a time when she's otherwise busy.
Okay.
Because then I'm choosing to go see a movie instead of hanging out with her. She wouldn't mind me going to see the movie while she's at work or something. That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. Get it out of your system, kind of thing.
But if she's not working, then she'd be upset. Like, yes. Why didn't you hang out with me?
Oh, yes. Semantics.
Instead of hanging out with Mark Ruffalo.
That's right.
There you go.
That's the reason to go, too.
Yeah. That's truthfully, yeah.
Oh, Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
I have a man crush on Mark Ruffalo.
I have a man crush on Mark Ruffalo in the Avengers. He's one of the best parts of that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. And I love Robert Downey Jr. too. He's kind of my favorite. Yeah. So
I haven't seen a Robert Downey Jr. movie where I'm like, you know what? He could have been recast ever. He's always just on. I never have a complaint about him. Even when he was drugged up. Even those years.
Those were especially some of his best years.
When he was drugged up.
Yeah.
When he came on Ally McBeal. That sure got better.
That's true. I
need to brush up on my Ally McBeal, I guess.
All right. Should we get into the list?
Probably.
Let's do it.
All right.
So
now, Blaine, do you want to go first or last?
Because
if you ain't first, you're last.
All right.
Well, if you go first, you don't have to worry about anybody taking your pick.
All right. I'm going first then.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So, all right. So you guys asked me, you know, the topic, right? Yeah. So I went back and forth, but, you know, romantic comedies, I felt like it might be a difficult topic because there really only are a few good ones.
Yes.
But there are 6 million really bad ones.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we might have a lot of the same. That's my concern.
And you know what? Like, it's funny because when Adam was like, oh, we're going to do romantic comedies, I was like, easy. This is going to be so easy.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Yeah. And then again, like you, I pulled up the list and I'm like, okay, not that one. And then like 3 hours in, I'm like, I haven't picked one.
Yeah.
And it was really difficult. I think it's easier with like chick flicks. If you just go with, but I didn't want to do that. So it was kind of, it was really, really hard.
Is Jenny? There going to be a Catherine Heigl embargo?
I think there should be.
No
Catherine Heigl allowed.
If there's any justice in the world.
Yeah. Jenny, do you have a hard time with this?
Let
me check. She's like, hold on. Let me delete this
one.
I had
a hard time because we did best romantic films for Valentine's Day. And I just love comedy so much that almost all of my favorite romantic films were all romantic comedies. And so I'd already used like all the good ones.
So you can just say ditto.
So I'm thinking of just redoing them.
I feel like I
didn't hear that episode. So it's okay by me.
So they're new to you. So,
yeah.
All right. So again, romantic comedies.
So we start with number 5.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yes. Okay. All right. I had a hard one with 5. Obviously, I guess 5 is always the hard one.
Yeah.
That's where your honorable mentions come in. And I wasn't going to decide until right now. So I'm deciding. Number 5 for me is Pretty in Pink. And
this is really good.
I
so far no overlap.
Yeah.
Every time I say my pick, I have to look around just to see like who's gonna be like not
even
have,
no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or who's like who's about to say fuck.
Yeah. but I love this movie, and you know, Andrew McCarthy, his name is Blaine in the movie, and I have a story that makes me really like this movie. Anyways, so I've always liked this movie. There's this line that Ducky, John Cryer, says, where he's like, Blaine is not a name, it's a major appliance. And people have been saying that to me my entire life. I still don't know what it means. I don't know what a major appliance named Blaine is, but whatever. But I did a movie with John Cryer. And I directed him in Weather Girl, and he showed up the first day, and he's like, first of all, I'd like to apologize for any 80s movie I might have done that maybe you got tormented about. And I'm like, really? And he's like, you have no idea how many people named Blaine crossed the street to yell at me for their childhood.
Oh my God.
But I love this movie. I think John Cryer is great in it. And you know, that was supposed to be Robert Downey Jr.
Really? You know
that? Oh, that part?
Yeah, he was supposed to play Ducky, and they were supposed to end up together at the end.
Really?
Yeah, and then he dropped out, and they mixed it up a little bit, and Andrew McCarthy was so dreamy that she ended up with the bad guy. But, little movie trivia.
The bad guy with the bad wig at the end of that movie.
Does he have a wig on?
Yeah, because they went with the Ducky ending originally, but they're like, it just doesn't work. Molly Ringwald was complaining, it doesn't work. I don't, she didn't think that she and John Cryer would be getting together. So they had to go back and reshoot it. But Andrew McCarthy was in a play on Broadway playing a Marine, and he had shaved his head.
Oh.
And so if you watch it, his hair looks really bad in that scene because it's a wig.
Interesting.
I need to go back and look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He should have just said, oh, man, I was just wrestling a bit, and my hair is disheveled.
That's the thing. It doesn't look – it looks like Ken hair. Like, like old – like before they made the Barbie and Ken dolls have real hair, the Ken dolls, it was just the plastic hair. It looks like a shell. Like it just – put it on his head.
He had like colonial hair, like with the little locks. It's all powdered wig.
Almost.
I don't know what it says about my choice that they can literally at the last second go and just replace the last scene and just change the movie completely and it doesn't matter. But that's number five.
I think it's a great pick.
I always confuse this and
16 Candles.
And 16 Candles. Which one has Harry Dean Stanton in it?
Pretty in Pink.
Pretty in Pink. Okay.
Yeah.
I love Harry Dean Stanton.
I know.
All right.
All right, so my number five is from 93, and it's So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Good movie.
Nice.
It is. It's the good years of Mike Myers.
Yeah.
The good ones, yeah.
The good years.
Yeah. I don't know. I just love this movie. My sister was super obsessed with it, so I just watched it all the time, and it still, like, got me at the end with the switcheroo.
A little twist ending?
Yeah, a little twist ending. That's the word I couldn't think of, twist. I said switcheroo. Mm.
Yeah, like the swirly ending.
Switcheroo is pretty good too.
But yeah, so I love that movie. It's a good one.
I hadn't seen that movie till I started dating Michelle.
Really? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Michelle's obsessed with this movie.
I love this movie. We watched it all the time. I feel like it didn't do very well when it came out, though.
I don't think it did
either. I don't think it did. What's his beat poet that he does?
Whoa, man.
Whoa, man.
Yeah, that's it. Nice.
That and when he's his dad and he's singing, "If you up my body."
That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
And this was the beginning of him kind of playing a bunch of parts in different, in the same movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, before he just had Wayne.
Yeah. Just one character. And this one, he's like, you know what? I'm going to do a bunch of them.
You know what? I'm gonna add
characters. Yeah. Because it's not enough that I'm playing one character. I want to do more acting. He didn't direct this, did he? At all? He hasn't directed, right?
No, Thomas Chalamet?
Okay. Sure. I don't think he's ever directed. I don't think he has.
I don't think so.
I only think he's just a writer, right? He wrote all the Austin Powers movies, I think.
I think so.
That makes sense.
All right, that's a good choice. I dig it. I didn't expect that, so yeah. My number five is from 1989, and it's Say Anything.
Yeah! Oh, man. Yeah. Missed it completely. Yeah. That's a good one, man.
And I think,
okay. I just took it off my list, actually. It's number seven.
It's another movie that I hadn't really... I had seen it when I was younger, but it was kind of like I saw it when I was... Too young, you know what I mean? Like, and it just kind of went over my head, I feel. But then I watched it when I was older, and I had dated it a couple times, and it really, really made sense. And then the music in it, again, Russell Crowe. Mm-hmm. Russell Crowe. Oh,
yes.
My God.
Cameron Crowe. I love Russell Crowe's movies.
He was throwing a phone at somebody. Cameron Crowe is just such a so good with music, and that kind of spoke to me. And, you know, who hasn't reference that, you know, the boombox over the head.
Didn't they have Lloyd Dobler Day last year when this was like the anniversary?
Did.
Like
they
a
did.
Bunch of dudes in the street holding up boomboxes.
Boombox.
That's awesome. What? That is so cool.
And
where? Here in LA?
I think it was in New York, actually.
Oh, well.
Where all the cool stuff happens.
Right.
Yeah. and then at the end, I really enjoy the ending. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, just turn it off.
It's been on
seconds.
For a while, yeah. So if you haven't seen it yet, then...
I really enjoy that ending. Where
in the airplane?
Yeah, they're just looking at the sign, and then it cuts to black, and it dings, ding, And that's it. And I just really enjoy that ending.
It's a, it's one of my favorite movies about two young people making a horrible life decision.
Oh, yeah.
It, it's like, yeah. It's like you're 18 years old and you're moving together to London. That's really a bad choice. But go for that.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the sequel would be about a guy getting over that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
just being like, man, I lost 10 years. Like, I lost 5 years of my life. Going
I think, I think that movie's on my list, actually.
And they've always kind of, everybody's wanted a sequel to that. I've, you know, reading up on this movie, and they've all said that they're not going to do it. But I think, was this the first movie that, that Joan Cusack and John Cusack? The first movie they
were
killed?
Yeah,
oh,
were
that's
candles.
Right, that's right, that's right.
Already.
The Cusacks.
Oh, yep. The Cusacks.
Yeah.
There's so many of them.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So my number five, I'm gonna be this guy.
Would...
I'm going to be a little bit pretentious here.
Savannah told me you would be.
All right, so I'm gonna. I had so much trouble with this list. I'm just like, just it's just kind of a grab bag at this point. I'm like, I don't even know where to go. So I figure pretentious is the easiest way. Now that everyone's got 80s out of the way, we're good to go. So from 1968, Stolen Kisses.
You had to be that guy.
I did. You're I'm like, sorry. You know what to tell you? It's French Watch.
You could the topper could have been a foreign film. You could have just gone with a foreign.
It could have. It could have. But I love this movie so much. I had to rewatch it. That's the thing. Oh, I was rewatching a bunch of movies when we decided to do this, and it's just so much fun. And it's so French and silly. And he like he joins a detective agency, and he's in love with his one of his clients. Wives, and then he's got Christine also. It's just, it's so much fun. It's my favorite of the Antoine Doinel movies.
And give us the synopsis for people who have...
Okay, so Antoine Doinel, he just got kicked out of the army, and so he's trying to kind of find his place in the world. He ends up getting a job at a detective agency, and he's trying, he's reuniting with his ex-girlfriend, Christine Darbon, and it's just kind of him going on all these misadventures as a detective and all these other odd jobs, just kind of finding his way. And it's so much fun. And the scene, my favorite scene from this entire movie is when he's alone in his bathroom looking in the mirror just saying Fabienne Tabard over and over again, the name of the wife of the shoe store owner who he's working for undercover. It's so convoluted. It's so weird and funny in French. But he just keeps saying her name over and over again, and he starts saying the other girl's name, and he starts saying his name. And it's just such a weird, quirky scene. And I don't know. I needed some French on my romantic comedy list.
You know, I almost went French too.
Okay.
But I took it out last minute.
Okay.
But it'll be a honorable mentions.
All right.
I'm gonna sound really dumb going after that one. And
I don't think so. See, you're not gonna sound dumb, you're gonna sound normal. I'm just like, oh, he went with a French movie.
Yeah.
That nobody's
a weirdo.
Nobody's saying
weirdo.
Well, good pick. At least you know we had to have a foreign film, and
I figured Kevin would have something for him, but he's not here.
Yeah, I know.
So. Kevin would have gone all black and white.
Yeah.
This isn't black and white.
He's all these movies I picked, they're silent films.
Yeah. So. Awesome. All right, so four?
Yes. Yes.
All right, so, okay. My little theme that I got happening here is that six-month rule is a very realistic view of romantic comedy. You know, it's not like broad, you know, a guy jumps on a horse and races across a bridge to stop a wedding kind of nonsense. It's very based in reality. And I think one of the most influential movies for me on tone is a little movie called Bull Durham, which I feel like is very real and very funny. But it's funny because it's about smart, funny people. Not wacky things happening. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this has one of the best, I think, just love weekends or whatever scenes ever between Sarandon and Costner at the end of the movie when they finally get together and there's like 7 or 8 minutes of them just having sex in all different parts of the house, and it's just awesome. Also inspirational for me. And you should see 6 Month Rule to see why. But that's it. Yeah, Bull Durham.
That's a good choice. A great pick.
My girlfriend is now in love with you. She's listening to this and now it's one of her favorite movies.
Yeah.
She really loves baseball movies. And
it's
especially
great.
This movie. And yeah, you know what? This is another movie I'm going to confess. I hadn't seen it until I started dating Michelle. And then she's
really?
Like, yeah, there's one of the. And it's funny because I came up, I watching, you know, baseball, you know, I've as a kid, I was into baseball, but not too much. But the more I went to games, the more I was into it. And the more I've been watching baseball movies. And I've realized that there's not a lot of baseball movies that suck out there. Mm. Every baseball movie that I've seen is pretty good. Like, even like Sam Raimi's For the Love of the Game is good. But the Bull Durham is really, really good.
It's a very cinematic sport.
Yeah, yeah. And some of the monologues that Kevin Costner has are
awesome. You know, it's like, it's such a great, the triangle of the three of them is so, they're such, so good, each of them. They're all watchable in their own way, but like, I just love it. And I think anytime you can set like a really great human story against a backdrop, you know, that's like, stuff's going on that has nothing to do with the main story whole time, you know, that's great. Like, I'm always trying, like Weather Girl, for instance, is like, the whole thing is kind of set in front of this idea of this morning news show. And so that stuff's going on, and that's just like the excitement and drama of day, you know, regular life. And then you stack the human element on top of that. I think that usually does really well.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies where anytime, like, wherever I come into the movie, I'm like, oh, Bull Durham's on. I'm going to watch Bull Durham.
Anytime. Yeah. You can, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hop on in there.
I'm on board on that. Yeah. Jenny?
All right. So my number four is really recent, 2011. It's Midnight in Paris. I put it on my, I think, favorite movies of 2011 also, but that had nothing to do with romance. So, I love this movie. I haven't seen enough Woody Allen movies is my thing. I've seen a handful, and this one is, I mean, I love all of the ones that I've seen, and so this one.
Well, that was another problem I ran into with this list. I felt like it could just be the Woody Allen list.
My favorite romantic movie, or my number one, was Annie Hall. So I definitely couldn't do my number one again, obviously. Yeah,
right.
But that one, Annie Hall. Midnight in Paris is like right below Annie Hall for me, but they're like both up there. I don't know. I love them both.
Let me pose a question. All right. Midnight in Paris is a great movie. I love that movie. But I have some issues. And I want to know if people, you know, who care enough as much about movies as I do, share this at all. Did you feel it was at all sloppy? Like, I felt like it was really sloppy filmmaking. Like, I feel like there were moments where, like, the camera's just set up and you feel like it goes a little too long or it goes a little too short. There's that one thing, I don't know if you've even noticed this, but it drove me crazy, where a woman in the background drops a shawl or something like that, but it's right in the center of the frame and it pulls your eye immediately. Like, I'm supposed to be looking at Owen Wilson look at something. Instead, I'm like, what's that? Oh, that's just an accident? You don't reshoot that? You don't? You know what I mean? I know it's crazy to say. He can do so much better when he pays attention. It's a beautiful story, beautiful performances. Mm-hmm. I just felt it was kind of put together a little clunky. Nobody? Nothing?
You know what? I was really into the, it's funny because I usually a movie that I see more than once, mm-hmm. which is this one was the case for this one. I saw it like 2-3 times in theaters. I usually, that's when I start paying attention to things. And I think for me, this one, it got me so much, like, it just got me into the story and stuff that I kind of forgot. I couldn't tell you, you know, where some of the shots were set at.
Right, right.
It just kind of sucked me in, and I think that's the case for me in this one.
I was just more amazed that Owen Wilson wasn't annoying me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really entertained by him.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, it's he did okay with Woody Allen, yeah.
Yeah, I thought he sucked me in just because I'm not a huge Owen Wilson fan. The fact that I was able to go along with him, it kind of had me involved. So
I wanted more of the going back in time than the staying with Rachel McAdams and her parents parts was the only thing that I would have changed.
I thought she was kind of the weak link on that movie. I don't know if...
Yeah.
I feel like...
She's just not Woody Allen.
Yeah, I feel like she couldn't keep up with like the dialogue where everybody else was kind of like on board. I feel like she was... Yeah. It was mostly with the dialogue.
She's good in other comedies. Yeah. It's just that's not the type... She's not good at dark comedy.
Yeah.
Rachel McAdams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are pissing Savannah off so much right now.
She's like,
I love her in everything else, Savannah.
It's all right. It's one of the most fun things I do is piss Savannah off. Savannah works in the office that I work in, so we get lots of time to talk about movies and her love for friggin' Channing Tatum or whoever the hell she likes this week.
I don't really remember her ever. But she doesn't really like Channing Tatum. She makes fun of his teeth.
All right. Who's her best
Ryan guy? Gosling.
Ryan Gosling. I like Ryan Gosling too.
Me
so.
Too.
But she loves Rachel McAdams a lot. Yeah.
I don't know somebody who doesn't like Ryan. You know, I love Ryan Gosling.
He's a man's man and a woman's man too.
Yeah. Where are we? Number four?
You're number four.
For my number four, I picked 2002's About a Boy.
Good movie. Nice. Yeah. Ah, that's a great movie.
Yeah. And it's one of those movies where I had seen, it was the same guys that did the first American Pie, which is weird because you're like, American Pie, then they go to this movie set in London, and it's just, it's such a good romantic comedy. Hugh Grant is amazingly funny. I've always been a fan of his.
Yeah.
He's just so, like, dry and
that's
and
his specialty is romantic comedies.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not better in any movie than he is in a Bad Boy, though.
Yeah.
He's such a perfect cad, you know?
Some people would say, like, Notting Hill, but no, I think this is it. This is how, it's kind of play himself. He's like a playboy, and it's just... He's like really vulnerable, and Toni Collette is like amazing in this.
It's like what Blaine just said about he gets to play a cat.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of a villain, which I mean, the villains get to have more fun.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a villain, but being a cat, you get to have more fun.
Yeah, and he's one of those actors like Robert Downey Jr. that, like, you know, you let them chew the scenery a little bit, and it's going to be so much fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's the young kid, Nicholas,
I forget his name. Yeah, he's really
Holt. He played
Beast. It's on your phone right there.
Yes.
Just keep going.
I can't say his last name.
I think it's Holt.
He can't pronounce it.
I'm pretty sure it's Holt.
He's really, really good, and you kind of really feel for him. And, like, it's I like that it's two romantic stories in one. He's kind of discovering love.
Yeah.
And so is Hugh Grant in his own way. Like, he's kind of growing up and you know, not being a teenager and stuff.
Was this his first movie? Nicholas
Hoult. No, he had done stuff before, but this is his big breakthrough.
This must have been the first thing I saw.
Oh, and he's got that crush on Natalia Tenney, who's in Game of Thrones now.
Yeah. We saw a little topless nudity for her. little Mr. Skin trivia.
I set that one. You got that. I set up that basket. I knew where you were going to go with that.
Bam.
And it's just weird for me to see him now, though, because I'm so used to him in About a Boy, Nicholas Hoult.
Yeah.
And then seeing him now, he's like this towering 6-foot something blonde dude. Like, seeing him in A Single Man,
he
was flirting with Colin Firth,
right. Yeah, that was
really
him.
Weird.
Yeah.
I was like, what's happening here? I don't feel right. I don't like this. Damn you, Tom Ford.
Yeah. But yeah, that's my number four.
Okay. Nice. We're on number four. All right. Number four, making up for my Frenchie before, is from 1987. It's Roxanne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I love Roxanne.
Yeah.
I think this was one of the first, like, VHS tapes I made my mom buy for me. I was like, I want Roxanne. And I think it's rated. Is it rated R?
I think it is.
R, PG-13? Oh no. Okay, so it's 80s, so it's when that weird rating section. So it's only PG.
I feel like it could be R. It could have been. Now it would be
based
R.
on the talk that they have. Well, just all the double entendres that he has in the scene, the dart scene, which is the best scene in the movie, when he says he can come up with 20 better insults than the guy who calls him Big Nose, which I love. That's a great scene. But it's just Steve Martin at his best. An adaptation of... Okay, so I am being pretentious and douchey again.
It's funny. No, I almost was douchey because I almost picked the original. I almost picked Cyrano de Bergerac.
Okay.
Yeah, so. But it wasn't funny enough. So if I should have picked this, but...
It's so funny. Yeah. And then just the cast. Daryl Hannah is great in it, but like Fred Willard as the mayor... And in that like Aspen like town, we're talking about people skiing topless while they're on cocaine. And then Damon Wayans is in it. Michael J. Pollard as the kooky guy. And then what's the name? What's the guy? The dude who's Rick Rossovic. He's just that guy. The only two movies I can think of are this and Top Gun. He's
Slider.
One. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And just like,
Slider, you stink.
Yeah, that's the guy. And like, he's just, he plays the stupid guy so well.
Yeah.
It's kind of admirable. Shelley Duvall is great as the cousin. It's just a fun, fun movie. If you haven't seen Roxanne,
haven't
you
seen
should
that
check it out.
Forever. I used to have it on VHS too, though.
Yeah.
What a great movie.
Yeah.
And then like the little camp, like Kevin Nealon when they have the duel, except instead of swords, it's with a tennis racket. It's a fun, fun movie. And then him falling in love with Daryl Hannah. It's understandable. It's Daryl Hannah in the 80s. So
yeah. I feel like Daryl Hannah got hotter as she got older.
I don't know. Splash.
Yeah.
She was pretty foxy in Splash.
Yeah.
And a little bit naked.
Yeah. 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 All right. So we're at number three now.
Number three. All right. Number three for me is broadcast news.
Ooh. Oh, wow. I wasn't expecting that.
I love broadcast news. I think it's a great movie. And what do I have to say about it? Holly Hunter and Albert Brooks and William, what's his name?
William Hurt.
I mean, it's exactly what we were saying about baseball. You know, you build these great performances and have this background that's got, you know, all this drama built in inherently. And it's great. And it doesn't all work out tied up in a nice little bow,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I like that, too. I like real stories, and I think it's a really funny movie.
Yeah, I think what appeals to me about a lot of films is the fact that they're not – just like life. Sometimes life isn't a little pretty bow at the end. And the thing is that when a movie ends, life still goes on for those, you know, characters. And I like when it's like, well, it's not all tied up for you.
Right.
Things happen. So I love this movie.
Cast. I mean, those three actors together. It's such a great cast.
And Joan Cusack. Cusack?
I hear it both ways. Fast. So yeah.
Cusack. Either way.
Cusack. Yeah.
Who knows? When we have one of them on as a guest, we can ask them. What's the youngest Cusack? Cusack? The one that was in Toys, the little girl. Or no, Kindergarten Cop. She's a Cusack.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about, but I don't know. Girl, yeah. Really.
Oh, wow. How can you not look at her? She looks like Cusack.
Like him. Yeah. You look like Cusack.
You have any Cusack?
You have some Cusack in you?
good pick. And then it's on Criterion now. I'm looking at the picture.
Oh, yeah, Broadcast News.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I've never seen that one.
It's great. It's really fun. It's not work at all. Like some movies are like, just, you know, give it a chance. No, right from the beginning, it's fun and smart. And
James nice. L. Brooks?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. And it has Albert Brooks. I always, when I was younger, I used to confuse them both. I'm like, who the hell's James L. Brooks and who the hell's Albert? Who is who? And then once I found, you know, Defending Your Life, then I'm like, clear.
Right,
now it's
right.
clear. Yeah.
So. He's really great in that. I love when Albert Brooks plays... it sounds weird, but like I was going to say plays himself, kind of plays like a nerdy guy. He always plays himself, but sometimes the way people react to him is not like like Defending Your Life, you know? People react to him like he's a pretty charming, suave dude. Like he doesn't have much trouble with people, but in this movie, he's such a nerd. Yeah. And like there's this great scene where he goes, his dream is to take over the anchoring position, and he gets to do it on a weekend when nobody's there and everybody's out of town, and he gets this attack of sweats, and like he's sweating, like, and they're rushing in during the commercial trying to blow dry his shirt. It's really funny, and he handles it so well. Like he's so good.
He's amazing. I really like me some Albert Brooks.
Yeah, he's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number three is another 90s one, and it's Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Ooh. Interesting.
I went that way.
Hey, I would not have thought that at all.
Yeah, me neither.
It's actually, okay, see, in my head, I think of it as a romantic comedy because it's a comedy, and then also there's Maid Marian and Robin, and they end up together. So that's the romantic part, right? Boom.
I think it hits all the major criteria.
Yeah. But it doesn't say that in IMDb. It doesn't say romantic, so or romance at all. It's adventure, comedy, and musical, which okay. But there's romance in it. He's doing
I guess
it.
So.
Yeah.
We'll allow it.
He's doing we'll it.
Come on.
They don't know chastity belt.
Yeah,
they
I know.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
I love this one though. Carrie Ells. Ells.
Carrie Ells.
Ells.
Yeah. I can never say his last name.
Yeah.
I, now
Wesley.
I go. Yeah, Wesley. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I almost put Princess Bride on here, but that was another one I'd put on something else.
Yeah.
So
I feel like there was a lot of potential for overlap on this list.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I love this movie. It's definitely more of a comedy than a romance, but I put it under romantic comedy.
Rebel.
Because I needed more.
whatever works.
Hell yeah.
Mel Brooks hasn't done a movie in a long time, has he? Was this his last movie?
Well, no. Did he direct the producers?
No, he didn't. Okay. No. He had nothing.
Dracula Dead and Loving, it was after this.
Oh, yeah, you might be right. Yeah. But that's it. I can't believe he hasn't done anything new.
He's an old man.
He's old, dude.
I guess so, still, though. I blame political
lazy.
Practice. I know. this is
he was a writer for the new producers.
Well, he wrote the original. Yeah. He automatically gets credit.
Oh, so he gets a credit for both.
Yeah.
Got it. Never knew that. Good to know.
Where are we at? Three?
You're number three.
Number three, I picked. Some people wouldn't call this a comedy. I do. I find a lot of things in this movie really funny. I picked Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I like it.
I find a lot of it funny. Especially,
it's very funny. It's just
I think you can disagree that it's funny.
Yeah. It's a dramedy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more of a dramedy.
Which is
but,
what I think the best romantic comedies are really dramedies at heart. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. And one of the funniest things in this movie is David Cross. The scene with David Cross.
I'm building a birdhouse.
And Jim Carrey, I think when he plays things, when he's not having it up, I think he's so much funnier than when he's like being big, when he contains himself and he lets like just like the comedy coming from inside instead of, you know, acting it out. I think he's so much funnier and so much more heartwarming to look at, and you like care for him so much. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen another Jim Carrey movie where I'm like, wow, like he probably deserved an Oscar nomination for this. I thought he did a really, really good job. And
I feel like Man on the Moon a little bit.
I get, that is too. That's another one that is he was amazing in.
Yeah.
And I don't know what is it the directors that direct him. I don't know what
maybe
it is.
Well, I feel like it's the directors, and then also I feel like a lot of what the cinematographer does, and maybe editing also with the stillness, because he has so much going on in his eyes in both of these movies, where it's just like, just stay on him and just watch the emotion in his eyes. And
And he's not jumping around. He's just kind of being still. And
And we know how much you like stillness.
Oh, he loves stillness.
You know what, though? I would just throw out there that I know a lot of actors that myself included, to be honest, the stronger the material is, the less you feel the need to make it good. Mm. And think of the movies that he's done recently and been hammy, and the movies suck anyways.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think he's ever messed up a performance, for me anyways. No. I've always felt like if the script is there, if the movie's there, he brings it. Mm-hmm. If the movie's not good and it's not funny anyways, he's just trying to push it. I mean, come on. What was that last one he did?
Mr. Penguin's Poppers or
Mr. Poppers? Mr. Penguin's Poppers.
You know he was all
again with the penguins.
He was all over the place with that thing. Yeah. You know? But like sometimes you're hired to make it better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You're the
I
guy.
I can't think
that...
of anything where he of any movie where he was my problem with the movie.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. And any movie that he was over the top, you couldn't. There's not another actor that could have made it better than he did. I never say so somebody else could. No. He did his best, and you know.
Yeah.
And I heard I Love You, Philip Morris was really good.
I heard that too.
I love that movie.
It's good, yeah. You haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it yet either.
Well,
Savannah watched it without me.
You're like, fuck that, Avengers.
Maybe I should have a podcast.
Did you see it, Blaine?
Yeah, I saw it.
I thought Ewan McGregor was amazingly funny in it, and so like subtle and just.
Ewan McGregor is amazing. He's like one of those actors to me that kind of disappears, you know, whereas like Carrie is always Carrie, but is a good actor, you know, but like Ewan McGregor, just what he does. Like, he just disappears in every single part to me.
Yeah.
I mean, he was Obi-Wan. Yes. Wasn't he Obi-Wan?
He was the most Obi-Wan thing.
How could... I was amazed. I'm like, how you walk away from those three movies and I still think you're a good actor? It's amazing.
Yeah. He was the purest Star Wars in those movies. Like, he was like the little
kernel
of truth.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, well, at least we've got him being Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
But everything else,
let's not talk about it.
We're gonna digitize. I like how like ballsy this movie was. Just like the script, like you know, like that. Some of the opening scenes were.
Wait,
like,
what are we talking about now?
Philip Morris.
Okay,
Philip Morris.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sorry.
Right from the get, they just throw you in the deep end.
Yeah, and it's either you're gonna accept it and love it, or you're gonna turn it off.
Yeah. Is it a romantic comedy?
I guess. Yeah.
I think you could say that.
Yeah, there it is a romantic comedy. I mean, it's two dudes. But yeah, that's allowed.
That is allowed. Yeah. Oh, I was like, well, I wonder if anyone's going to have just getting into the equal opportunity listing. It's like, are we going to represent everyone's taste in their romantic comedies?
I guess we should. I should have had this because I thought it was really, really funny. I thought it was really funny and really well made. And
so, if nothing else, it's now an honorable mention.
It's an honorable mention. Sweet. I forgot about the movie. Nice. So
wait, so what, is it my turn now?
Yeah.
Shit. All right. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to lay this gauntlet down there. 1988, When Harry Met Sally.
No!
See?
Overlap!
What is
I
this
was here? Like, this has got to be... I'm the girl. I'm going to be the only... Everyone's going to make fun of me for putting it on there.
Okay, well...
It's my number one.
That's your number one?
Yeah.
I'll let you have that number one. You can
No. We can do it. It's fine. We'll overlap on that one. Okay. I'm just surprised that you have it.
Oh my god, I love this movie.
Everybody loves this movie. It is the quintessential romantic comedy. Yeah, it's on my honorable mentions. I had it up there and then I moved it down because
he's a smart man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just like, I shouldn't put it up there, but it's too much other crap.
It's a great movie.
There's too much stuff. I watched this movie far too much as a high school boy. When I was in high school, I watched When Harry Met Sally all the time. It was really like this and Duets.
Really?
Yeah, Duets all the time.
The singing movie?
Yeah.
The really, Gwyneth Paltrow
singing
movie?
Yeah, I have no
movie?
Excuse for why I watch this movie so much.
That's weird.
That is weird. Okay.
You're in a theater.
I'm going to paint a picture of Adam Scott in high school. I watched a lot of Ally McBeal.
Clearly.
And I watched When Harry Met Sally all the time. One of my other movies I watched a lot, but we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, like playing like a lot of romantic comedies. It was really bizarre. I have no idea why.
I feel like I know you a lot
better
now.
Most of my friends were girls also, though.
Oh, okay.
Girls and theater dudes. So we watched a lot of romantic comedies. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that about you, dude.
I could see that.
It's being really revealing now. Very revealing.
I'm going to put it on the front street as I knock the microphone again.
Yeah.
I just love this movie so much. Billy Crystal's hilarious.
It's filled with so many quotables.
So many quotables.
Use them still. It's what year is this? 90?
80.
89, 80, right?
Yeah. 89.
And it's still like relevant.
Yeah.
Completely. Like, I mean, that's not forever ago or anything, but it's still like, there's a lot of things from the 80s that aren't really relevant to kids today, but this one is still.
Yeah.
This is, to me, the second most, like, referenced or ripped off or whatever you want to call it, romantic comedy.
Okay, what's the number one?
Annie Hall.
Yeah, okay.
Which I hope I'm not stepping on anyone else's toes, but that's not on my list because that was my number one for
me too.
The first.
I didn't put it in my first episode.
No, but for the first episode, that was one of my movies, so I didn't use it. I was just going to not put any movies around the AFI's top 10 romantic comedies, but... Yeah. It's When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
Is this the first movie to use the interviews, like talking to the camera in a narrative?
Wasn't Spinal Tap before this? Wasn't that 87?
Maybe.
Oh,
I want to say, yeah, maybe
yeah,
you're right.
I think
you're right.
Right.
Yeah,
I
think
Spinal Tap was before.
But Spinal Tap was a mockumentary.
Yeah.
Spinal Tap was a mockumentary, but in a narrative.
Okay. What about Reds?
Maybe you're right. Yeah.
But then that's...
Then that, like, now that's the norm. It's funny how, like, now, like you have shows like Modern Family.
Yeah.
And you never question why would... Because it's funny, I was listening to a Q&A with the writers, and you never question why the camera crew is in their house.
Right.
And the thing is, it's
They
it's
finally
supposed
mentioned
to be,
that in The Office. Like, did you see that episode?
Because
they don't really talk about it. And then all of a sudden, they mention it in one of the episodes. They're like, I feel like it was the episode that Michael's leaving that they finally discuss why the camera crew's following them around or something.
I don't remember that.
I think they were, like, just trying to do a documentary on The Office on Office People, because he goes, let me know when this airs, guys, or something like that.
That's right.
For years and years.
I think Harry Met Sally is a great example of something that I talk about a lot about being a writer-director and, like, you know, people being very careful about their words and their words being, you know, perfect. I think Harry Met Sally is a great example of a script getting better because you play on set and you let... I mean, Billy Crystal, how many of those things did he just make up? How many of that did, you know, was it just them talking and her literally just responding to him and, like, making it real? Like, you can make any script better on set. You just can.
The Paprikash thing.
Yeah.
When you're in the museum.
Yeah. Right.
That was them. And that's one of the best parts of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Crystal's great. I just rewatched Throw Mama from the Train.
Oh, what a great movie. I love that movie.
But he's so much fun in this movie, and she's really good.
Yeah.
And it was weird because, like, I'm trying to think of a tactful way to say this.
Oh, careful.
Look at Meg Ryan today and look at Billy Crystal today. Just visually.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, but for a while there, before she had work done, she looked the same. It was really creepy. It was like she didn't age for a while, but then she got work. I didn't think she needed to have work done because she looked exactly the same to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think everybody agrees with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Except her. And John Mellencamp, who's dating her.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, they were.
Interesting.
Last time I saw an Us Weekly in a waiting room.
Yeah, when you subscribed.
I was at the doctor's, and then it was just there. It was laying there. It was open to that page.
I had to read it.
You looked it up on Perez, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Me and Perez. So close. It's a great movie.
It is. I love everything about it.
And it's your number three.
My number three. Okay. Rob Reiner, Nora Ephron.
I'm gonna be 40 next year.
When?
Someday.
I feel like this list also could have easily been depending on if you wanted to go with the chick flicks, just all Nora Ephron movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll talk about that more when we get to honorable mentions.
Ooh.
Oh, interesting. All right. So we're on two now, right? Number two for me is a huge inspiration to me as far as dialogue, and it's a movie called His Girl Friday, and kind of one of the screwball comedies of the 40s, I guess. I don't have the...
What year was it?
But
1940.
Cary Grant has never been better. Like, he's good in pretty much everything, but he's never been more suave and more cool and... faster and funnier than in this movie, and I just think it's great. I can watch it over and over and over again.
This and It Happened One Night are my honorable mentions, and they were kind of fighting to get on there, but I'm glad somebody brought it up.
I'm very glad you brought it up. It's really good,
and again, it's one of those movies where some movies you watch that are, you know, pre-50s, and you're like, they don't hold up, but this is one of them that holds up. Even this one, and again, It Happened One Night. I could watch them, and you could show them to anybody, you know, and it makes sense, and it holds up, I feel.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. It came down to a point where it's not so much that I don't love the movie, because I love this movie so much, but it's movies that I could remember vividly. Like, I could reenact scenes from movies, and as much as I love this movie, I can't reenact the scenes from it, because I haven't seen it enough. But it's such a good movie.
Yeah.
It's so great. Howard Hawks.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of the... I have Casablanca and His Girl Friday, like, on... And I just put it in when I'm, you know, doing something else. Mm-hmm. And, like, the dialogue is like music. It's so perfect. Like, not one misspent, you know, syllable. Mm-hmm. And this is the complete opposite of what I was just saying about Harry Met Sally. Sometimes the script's perfect.
Yeah.
And it's like movies like this.
Well, it's perfect. It's been remade, like... because this is a remake of The Front Page, which they made twice before they made His Girl Friday, where they made it a man and a woman in a romantic comedy. And then they made it, Billy Wilder did it again with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon.
Really?
The Front Page. And his version.
The Front Page.
Yeah.
All right.
His version of The Front Page is the only one that actually it's based on the play. Because everyone else played with the time period a little bit, I think.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
This movie itself was remade in the 80s.
Oh.
A little not improving on the original work, with Kathleen Turner and Burt Reynolds in the main part. And another little nod to me.
Burt Reynolds with mustache or without?
With mustache.
Okay.
With mustache. And the bumbling fiance of Kathleen Turner's is Christopher Reeve. And his name is Blaine. Yeah.
Nice.
So we're come full circle, you guys. It's very important that some yuppie guy named Blaine is in at least two or three of the movies that we discussed.
So has James Spader ever played anyone named Blaine?
No, but he was in Pretty in Pink.
Right.
And says, "All right, Blaine." Like, he says it like 100 times.
So him saying your name.
Oh, it's got it. It just echoes. All right.
That should be your ringtone.
I should. If I could figure out how to do that, I would.
Where are we? Two?
Number two.
Yes. Me?
Yes.
Okay, my number two. This one, I couldn't decide if I wanted to put it on here, but I decided because I've seen it so many times, I can pretty much do it word for word. It's 98's The Wedding Singer.
Oh, good one.
This is like good Adam Sandler.
I think that is good Adam Sandler. I think that's the high point there as far as quality film.
He's not being an idiot like when Jim Carrey's kind of over the top. He's not like doing his idiotic movies.
Or when Adam Sandler's going over the top.
Yeah. Right, I guess, yeah. That would be the same. He's kind of more down to earth, and I love 80s music. It's got like one of the best soundtracks ever, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
My
favorite character in that is Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
He's the best man. The better man.
Yeah. Yeah.
That scene when he comes out, Steve Buscemi, I could watch it over and over. Yeah. When he's playing guitar, he's like self-taught. Thanks, Dad. Thank you very much.
I think Alan Covert is one of my favorite parts. He's the one that plays the guy who's always wearing the Michael Jackson jacket, the limo
yes.
dress.
Oh, yeah.
He's, this is my favorite of his roles in an Adam Sandler movie because he's so much fun in this movie. And when he's making him do the tryouts to be the limo driver.
He's the same guy that does Grandma's Boy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I love that movie, too.
He's like,
yeah.
You hit a cone. He's like, it's a cone.
Yeah.
Everybody in this movie is really funny, and I like
even
Billy
Drew
Idol.
Barrymore is okay.
Even Billy Idol.
Yeah.
Even Billy Idol. Yeah. Billy Idol's pretty funny in this.
He kind of stretched out his, he did a little acting there, you know. Not playing himself. Yeah, he's playing himself.
Yeah, playing himself.
Billy Idol as himself.
I hope nobody ever says of me, even Blaine Weaver was okay. the Drew Barrymore compliment. Yeah, you're okay. you.
Right.
Well, as long as I feel like, as long as they don't say your name twice, you're good. Like how was Blaine? Blaine was Blaine. If you get a double in the same sentence, you're not.
You have the benefit of actually being an actor, though, not a rock star playing themselves.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. But if you add a / rock star to your resume,
trouble.
There might be trouble in the future.
It would be trouble for all of us, believe me.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear me wailing on my axe. That's not a euphemism.
All right. So my number two is from 2002. And I will top your Wedding Singer with Punch Drunk Love.
Punisher? That's what it sounded like you said first.
The Punisher.
Wait, Dolph Thomas Lundgren. Jane? Or yeah.
No, Punch Drunk Love. I really love this movie. And as much as I like Adam Sandler in The Wedding Singer, he was amazing in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're right.
The best he's... And it's kind of showed... I think he's just scared of doing this, like taking big risks. But I think he can do it. And this showed, like, this guy can act. He's not just this guy who does funny voices. Mm-hmm. He was amazing in this. And I think it's the stillness. But it's also... the stillness. But I also love that it's so funny. The movie is really, really funny. It's filled with funny moments. And I especially like Luis Guzman in this.
Yeah.
He's just such a good sidekick. There's a scene that wasn't scripted that I love and they kept it in the movie. Luis Guzman sitting down, and Adam Sandler's running around, and his chair breaks. He's got an office chair. It breaks. He falls on the floor, and he gets up. He doesn't skip a beat. He's like, "My chair broke," and he's like, and Adam Sandler doesn't acknowledge it. He's just like so into what he's doing, and he doesn't. It's so funny, and I'm glad they left it in there, and just like the scenes, it's they're funny, but they're so sad. The scenes with his sisters, mm-hmm. and like, remember we used to call you Gay Boy, remember? And he would cry, and you could see how sad he is. And they're really funny because they're making fun of him, but you could see how sad he is. And I think it's really funny.
I love that movie. I think that's great. I don't normally count it, you know, as an Adam Sandler movie because it's I think, you know what his problem is? I'm going to tell you what his problem is.
Okay.
Here it goes. I think he lacks discipline. You know, he lacks an idea of like, here's what the film is about. Here's what it needs to be. Where maybe a P.T. Anderson, that was his movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's... He can do that,
and
Sandler will listen. But I think Sandler likes to be in charge and just,
you
know, he feels like it's just a stupid movie. Who cares?
Yeah.
Whereas he can be really good when he's in a project that has parameters. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, no, totally. Oh, when it's like an auteur or like somebody who's used to taking charge besides who could outrank Sandler.
Right.
If there's a director who could outrank him, I feel like he does the best.
Yeah, I'm guessing Punch Drunk Love is not a Happy Madison production.
No.
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
I think that's the key.
Okay.
I think anything that's not produced by Happy Madison.
Well, was The Wedding Singer?
No, it wasn't.
It was a Drew Barrymore production, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right. Interesting. It's all starting to piece together. We got you, Sandler.
Boom.
So you're not looking forward to Grown Ups 2?
Oh my God, really? They're doing that?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody said that. Everybody in the world said, oh my God, they're doing that? Why would anyone think that's a good idea?
Because they just get paid to hang out with their friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aren't we supposed to be artists, you guys?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know about says that. The guy who picks a French movie.
No, I just want to see someone funny and make a joke about peeing in the pool. That's all I want.
There.
Yeah.
Yep.
Lots of jokes about being in the
movie. And my other favorite scene in Punch Drunk Love is when he goes and meets her in Hawaii, and they're having like that romantic moment they're laying in bed, and they're saying like really horrible things, but really sweetly.
Out his eyes.
Yeah, he's like, I want to punch you in the punch you in the skull. And they're saying really horrible things, but it's really sweet and funny and I don't know.
I have not seen that movie in such a long time. I'll have to rewatch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do remember the disturbing moments. And Philip Seymour Hoffman being awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number two from 1988. Some people might not consider it a romantic comedy, but I think it works. Coming to America.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. A great movie.
Yeah. It's a romantic comedy.
Yeah, he's coming to find his bride.
Yeah.
In Queens, the best place to find a queen.
Yeah.
Which could be taken multiple ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's so funny. And this, I mean, I felt like the romance and the comedy are pretty equally balanced because he's spending most of the time just trying to get the girl.
Yeah.
And it's just Eddie Murphy being hilarious and Arsenio Hall being hilarious. They're really funny.
I don't know why he didn't work more as an actor. I
mean, Arsenio Hall?
Yeah.
I mean, he was really good in that movie. He was really good in that movie.
He's really funny, and I was just rewatching Chappelle's Show, and he's got a little cameo in that when Chappelle imagines him at a cheese party, and he was really funny, and just that little brief moment.
Yeah.
I think he's really funny in Harlem Nights.
Yeah.
I never watched his Arsenio Hall show on TV because I wasn't a late night kid to stay up and watch that. I wasn't part of the Dog Pound.
I wonder how good he was in The Apprentice.
Oh, I didn't even know.
He was pretty funny.
He just won it.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he?
Mm-hmm. Well done. Wow.
Perez.
Right. Of course.
It's so much fun. They're all great. James Earl Jones, who's in an honorable mention that I'll mention later. John Amos, Eric LaSalle. Everybody is not just Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall. Everybody in this movie is funny.
Yeah.
Sam Jackson's funny when he robs the McDowells.
Yeah.
McDougal's,
is it?
McDowell's. Yeah.
They have the golden arches. We have the golden arcs.
Yeah.
He knows. And Louis Anderson's one of the guys that works with him at McDowell's.
Right, that's right. He's really good, man.
It's so much fun. Such a funny movie. Everybody, I feel like this is one of the few movies where everybody gets a chance to be funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That is fun. Usually the lead guy gets all the laughs. But
yeah.
This is spread pretty evenly.
Yeah.
I like it.
I mean, and even with Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall playing multiple roles, they still have room to let 99% of the cast have a funny moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Expecting that. Yeah.
Good call.
Good pick. So let's do your recap.
And then recap? You're
number one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to get recapping. Number five was Pretty in Pink. Number four was Bull Durham. Number three was Broadcast News. Number two, His Girl Friday. And my number one, call it predictable if you want. You guys have a podcast. You get to talk about this stuff all the time. Annie Hall.
So, I'm glad you brought it up. Now we can talk about it.
Yeah. No, I wasn't allowed to.
It's a game changer. You know? It's like it changed – to me, it changed what a rom-com can be, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of people, and I think that's why there's so many derivative, you know, movies about that. But like when we did Weather Girl – I wrote a very popcorny romantic comedy to sell. And then when it came together that I was making it, that's not what I wanted to make. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, I'm going to make this more real, more grounded, more the kind of thing that I'd like to watch, like Annie Hall. And, you know, Weather Girl is not Annie Hall, but it's influence. And I think that's why Annie Hall is number one. It's like just that it's out there influences what other movies can reach for.
Well, and Weather Girl is really good, but it was also, it's not one of those instances where I'm like, where I'm seeing the influence of Annie Hall, which I feel is a problem sometimes. I'm like, you're just trying to make Annie Hall again.
Yeah.
And then actually, Six-Month Rule, not that, it kind of reminds me of Annie Hall, but in like, it's like Annie Hall from the point of view of Tony Roberts' character.
Right.
Which I really like. That's really funny to me. Because Blaine's character is like the charming one. He's the opposite of the Woody Allen character. So it's just switching the roles.
Yeah.
And it's really funny. And I've never seen that before. And I really like that.
Cool. Well, thanks. Yeah, there's a lot of not making my Annie Hall talk about Six-Month Rule, but there's a lot of changing the expectations in the romantic comedy. You know, we've said a lot of times that there's another character in the movie that's kind of a love triangle thing where if this was another movie, he would be the lead character.
Mm-hmm.
But in this movie, it's me, and I'm not the most likable guy all the time. Anyways, it's interesting. You should go see it opening June 1st. All right.
But you know awesome. What, too, is that Adam and I were talking about this because we watched. Did you get to watch the PBS documentary on Woody Allen?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Where they talk about how Annie Hall. I think it was the documentary they talked about it, or we read it somewhere. I feel.
Well, where are you talking about Manhattan Murder Mystery?
Yeah, yes.
I think I told you that because they talk about that in the conversations with Woody Allen. That's at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Manhattan Murder Mystery was originally part of Annie Hall. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. In what way? What do you mean? It was
the storyline. Yeah,
was part. It was just this ridiculously long movie where they take a random tangent and there's a murder mystery in the middle of the movie. But it's like, no, let's make that something else.
Okay, interesting.
Which I'm really curious about. And also, I watching the documentary, they talked about how a lot of this movie was made in the editing room. What he wrote and what the finished product was very different. Mm-hmm. That a lot of Annie Hall was his editors were doing. And that was one of the things that I either read or saw.
Well, he's also just notorious for reshoots.
Yeah, yes, which I didn't know until the documentary.
Well, like the entire cast recast September.
Yeah.
He's all about reshoots.
And also,
like, that's in the budgeting. It's like, all right, so we're going to film the movie then. And then so many weeks later, we're going to come back for reshoots and basically do it all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. And that made me kind of. It gave me a little relief. Like, okay, if this guy, if a person like Woody Allen does reshoots, I'm okay. You know, like when I direct something, it's just such a high standard that I held him to that I'm like, oh, okay, even he has these days where, you know, he allots himself.
He's a person
reshoots.
Too.
You know, I feel like a lot of that movie, and I haven't seen the documentary. I don't know. This is just always how I felt about the I've said the word organic a lot today. The organic feel of that movie is very much like discovering Diane Keaton as this just weirdo charming girl and like falling in love with her in the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, is kind of what that is. And I think like aside from it being like the most well sculpted piece of art you've ever seen, which it's not, you know, it's got rough edges all over the place, but I feel like the standing by it at the end and being like, this is something completely different than you've ever seen, and this is what we want, you know?
Yeah.
It's so great. I think because this was on my top five, our first episode.
Of all time.
Yeah. All time favorite movies. Yeah,
me too.
And it's like what I said, there's a moment when you grow up and you realize, like, you understand why Annie Hall beat Star Wars for getting an Oscar. Like, oh, you're a grown-up now. Because that makes sense. But it's so, and the ending, I love the ending. Just how it's not that, oh, and they live happily ever after. Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen Annie Hall by now, though, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. But it's such a great movie, a great pick. I'm glad you had it because
me too.
I was contractually obligated not to put it on my list.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't put it on. Yeah, I put it on my favorite romantic films, and I didn't think about romantic comedies back then. But yeah,
some of my favorite scenes is the cocaine scene.
Oh yeah,
and Jeff Goldblum.
Yes, I forgot my mantra.
I forgot my mantra. I love him in that. All right, so your recap.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So my number five was So I Married an Axe Murderer, 4 Midnight in Paris, 3 Robin Hood Men in Tights, 2 The Wedding Singer, and my number one was When Harry Met Sally. Boom, bing, boom.
Oh, that's right.
It was a
good choice.
All right. My recap is number five, Say Anything, number four, About a Boy, number three, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, number two, Punch Drunk Love, and my number one is from 2004, Sideways.
Oh,
interesting.
Yeah.
Dark comedy.
Yeah. And I think the comedy all... I love this movie because of Thomas Hayden Church.
Yeah.
He's just, like, he's kind of, like, doing these horrible things, but I still love him.
Yeah.
I still love him. And Paul Giamatti, again, he's amazing. And the humor out of him is that he's so serious and he's so... this movie's... so well written, I feel, and really well directed. I love everything Alexander Payne's done so far. And you're not too
I don't
much...
like about Schmidt.
Really?
I don't like about Schmidt.
I didn't mind it.
Don't like it at all.
Probably my least favorite.
I gave it a second chance. I went back and I rewatched it. I'm like, no, I don't like this movie.
Really?
Nope.
Is it Kathy Bates?
No, I don't care. Kathy Bates.
Is it? That's exactly what I
doesn't even bother me. Like, that is the least of
that's what got me in.
Movie.
They're like, whoa, Kathy
yes,
Bates.
Kathy Bates.
I need to check that off my list.
Yeah, I know. Well, the first time I didn't make it that far. I'm like, fuck this movie. I don't care. And second, I'm like, all right, I got to finish it because I got to see Kathy Bates. And I didn't. Yeah, no, it's not. I don't like that movie.
Hmm. I dug it. And I again, this movie's so funny.
I prefer Citizen Ruth.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. I like that one.
Wow.
I love Sideways, though.
Sideways, really, really funny. Did you see this, Jenny?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just so well made, and just, again, another, not, it's not a happy ending. It's mm-hmm. just, I like my,
it's
my
so
sad
real.
Story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like how real it is.
And Thomas, the things that Thomas Hayden Church, things that come out of his mouth.
I just love
he's
him.
He's like, get it published. Get it in libraries. It's like, that's his thing. Like, that's his thing. Like, he just wants it to be in library. But all, it just, it's filled with a lot of funny moments. And yeah, that's my number
one. I like Paul Giamatti, funny.
Yeah.
I like when he's funny because I feel like he's... I don't know. I've seen him in other things, and he's serious, and I like him more funny.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
And also, like, that he hates Pinot Noir. Like, there's nothing... No, he hates...
He hates Merlot.
Merlot, that's right. I have no problems with Merlot, but he like, with a passion.
Yes, very much so.
But, yeah. There's and funny thing, I was listening to an interview when Clooney did The Descendants. It was supposed to be Clooney in the part of Thomas Hayden Church.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
And really?
I guess, like...
I feel like
scheduling
I would have
been
a bit of a different movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. I don't think it would have been as funny.
He's funny, but in a different way than Hayden Christensen. Okay. What's his name?
Thomas Hayden
Christensen.
I don't know.
No, don't go back there.
No.
He'll always be Lowell to me. Isn't it Lowell from Wings?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So that's my number one.
That's a good pick.
Yeah.
It's a good pick. I did not see that coming. All right. My recap. Number 5 was Stolen Kisses. Number 4 was Roxanne. Number 3, When Harry Met Sally. Number 2, Coming to America. And my number 1 should really come as no surprise, Chasing Amy.
Nice.
Wow. I actually didn't expect that.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't put it on any list.
That's
how much
why.
Do I talk about Chasing Amy?
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
I love this. Okay, so this was the other movie when I was talking about weird movies I watch in high school all the time. I watched this movie religiously. This was the first Kevin Smith movie I ever saw. And this was the first movie that made me want to write movies that weren't spoofs.
Right.
Like when I was a little kid, I started writing spoofs. Like I was a big Airplane fan. And I would write I was always spoofing Star Wars or something.
Time Bomb, you mean?
I didn't do Time Bomb. That wasn't me.
Really?
That was not me. That was,
I saw
that
it. Was a, I saw it.
That was my friend Brandon. when I saw this movie, it was just kind of like, it spoke to me in a really weird personal way where I really liked how intimate it felt and how it's intimate but hilarious and just like these intimate moments with the two characters with Holden and Alyssa, but then you also have all these side characters. They're just boisterous and crazy with Banky and Hooper X, and I love this movie so much.
Yeah. And it's true, even he says so, that this is a movie that proves that he can direct. Like some people say, oh, he's just a good writer, but he was really well directed and really well written and just a great film overall.
Yeah. I love everything about this movie.
Yeah.
That's nice. All I got.
Yeah.
I don't know how many different ways I can say that I love this movie.
It's a good one.
Yeah. It's really good.
I like everyone in it.
Yeah.
And it's... Okay, so it's weird because Dwight Yule works at the ArcLight.
Oh, yeah,
in
right.
Hollywood. So I always see him. Like, I just... Part of me really just wants to go and be like, Hooper X, man.
Yeah.
But I never do.
Yeah.
But it's weird seeing him there all the... Like,
really weird.
The first time I saw him working there, I was like, dude... Hooper X, but apparently he likes, because I have a friend who works with me, so he just likes to have the steady work in addition to doing his acting work, so.
Oh, wow.
Whatever works for him.
Yeah.
And he gets to do that little spiel before the movie, which.
Yeah.
He works in the restaurant. He doesn't.
Oh, well, then that's depressing. Just kidding.
He probably makes more than the people who work in the theater.
You probably
That's
right.
true.
Yeah. Because yeah.
Kevin's. But it's a prestige thing, you guys.
Yeah. So should we do a little honorable mentions?
Mentions.
Yeah.
All right. Did I write them down? Yes. Here we go. High Fidelity.
Yeah. I was really surprised nobody else had that.
High Fidelity.
I put that on my favorite romantic films. I love that movie.
It's a great movie. I think so that's good. The sequel to Say Anything.
I think you're right.
Down Lloyd until he's just like this broken, neurotic mess. And he's got like 6 or 7... girls that he all loved just as much as Ione Skye or whatever her name is.
I feel like you could cut into his flashback scenes a clip from Say Anything and it'll work. Just someone, an editor geek who has
free time. She could have been like one of the first girls he talks about.
Yeah.
And this totally would have been the sequel. You're right. You're right.
16 Candles, I think, is actually a better movie than Pretty in Pink, but it has less connection.
Yeah.
Like, I like Pretty in Pink more. Okay. But 16 Candles is, I think, a better made movie and, like, really nice. Okay. And Anthony Michael Hall is amazing in it. Mm-hmm. I have to thank Dominic Ottersbach, who's one of the producers I work with today, because we were talking about this, and he brought up Tootsie.
Oh,
which
shit.
I'm like, yes, yeah. God, that's such a good movie. Yeah. You know, I haven't seen it in way too long to put to claim it as one of my favorites or one of the best or whatever, but that's a great movie.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a really, really great movie.
Of course, he's obsessed with Jessica Lange, so of course Dominic would come
he
up
he does
with
have
that.
A bit of a problem with that.
He does. It's weird. Those are mine.
Nice. Okay, so I put Say Anything. I put Knocked Up, Katherine Heigl, on my list.
Oh, Knocked Up.
That's the one acceptable one, though.
The one acceptable.
That's not a Katherine Heigl movie. That's an Apatow movie.
I completely agree. Saving Silverman. And I love that movie. It's so fucking funny. It is hilarious.
He's like, I don't want to see your fake butt.
Ever again. He's licking the Arby's sauce off of her chest. It's so funny.
Wow, I don't remember that at all. And I watched that movie a lot.
You know what? Because you had to see the R version. The PG, because the theatrical one was PG-13, but then they released an alternate R version. I think because the director wanted it to be R, and then the studio kind of. But the R version is so much funnier, and it's really,
Okay.
Oh, and then for recent movies, I only didn't put them on my list because they're really good movies, but I haven't seen them enough because they're too recent. Bridesmaids and Crazy Stupid Love.
I was going to say, I was really thinking you were going to have Crazy Stupid Love.
I love Crazy Stupid Love. I've only seen it like one time, so I can't.
I almost had it.
It's
close.
Such a good movie. I loved it when I walked out of it.
Can see me making this.
This close. His arms are so far apart right now. both of those. Too. I love them both. Bridesmaids is a little bit too girly for most guys, but
I like Bridesmaids.
Yeah, that's good.
I just felt like. Oh, that came to the point where I was thinking about romantic comedies where I'm like, the romantic part of that movie was seemed so much on the side to me. Because there were other movies where it's technically a romantic comedy, but the comedy for me wasn't coming from, like, it didn't seem so much about the relationship. Like, all the funny stuff from Bridesmaids was the stuff with the bridesmaids.
Yeah.
Like, the stuff with Chris O'Dowd is funny, but it's not, it didn't seem to be the center of the movie to me. It seemed the relationship between...
Her
and Maya Rudolph seemed more central than
that's romantic too. Friendships are romantic. I'm just kidding. I'm just talking on my ass right now.
Romance, they can romantic be. Comedy.
there you go.
It's a bromantic comedy. The woman. my honorable mentions was His Girl Friday.
Awesome.
It Happened One Night, Midnight in Paris, which you mentioned, and Crazy Stupid Love, and the last one, The Apartment.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I couldn't. I had The Apartment on my romance, my romantic movie list.
Yeah.
What a great movie. That needs a revisit.
Wow. That, again, is just it's just so well done. And the acting by Jack Lemmon, amazing. He's great in that.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an all-time favorite.
Yeah.
Is that him and Shirley MacLaine?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fred McMurray.
He's awesome. He's so classy. So classy.
That was so sincere. It was just like, God damn it, he's awesome. I love me some Fred McMurray.
That was so weird. I mean, even general audiences, seeing him play that smarmy guy after... Because, I mean, I grew up watching Nick at Night, so I was used to... I watched My Three Sons. Yeah. So seeing him go from the cheery My Three Sons dad to the douchey boss in that movie was really weird.
Yeah.
Also, what was weird, though, was seeing The Apartment after seeing Loser, which was the Amy Heckerling ridiculous adaptation of The Apartment.
Yeah.
That just kind of messes with
your
head.
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
What a blunder.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I feel like all of you did good jobs at keeping your list under control for your honorable mentions. I just kind of lost it. It was really tough to do this. So High Fidelity, Crazy Stupid Love, The Apartment, The Philadelphia Story.
Yeah, which I'm shocked that we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I feel like if Kevin was here, it definitely would have showed up.
Yeah.
But again, I was trying to like avoid movies that were on the AFI top 10.
Yeah.
Because this is one that just goes without saying.
Yeah.
It's such a great romantic comedy. And you got Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn, and Jimmy Stewart all in one movie.
Yep.
To me, I really like that movie. I have a little trouble with the... What's the dynamics, I guess? Like, that's the thing, the only thing that keeps me distant from that. I think it's fun, you know, screwball comedy thing. I don't know what they're thinking at all spots. I'm like, I think Jimmy Stewart and Katharine Hepburn really like each other. Then I'm like, oh, no, she really likes C.K. Dexter. Uh-huh. You know, it's like, I get trouble following the thread, and like I start pulling for somebody, and then it kind of takes its turn. But those scenes with Jimmy Stewart and Cary Grant are like my favorite the when they're drunk and they both crack each other up. Oh, that's so great.
That's it's such an amazing scene. And then what you just said about the whole losing track of the thread, that's another reason why this other movie didn't make it on my list, Trouble in Paradise.
Ooh.
Did you watch that LACC?
Yeah.
It's an Ernst Lubitsch movie. So this guy is a master thief who poses as a baron, and this woman is a pickpocket who poses as a countess, and they end up trying to rob each other. And they fall in love, and they realize that they both love to rob people. And so they kind of form an alliance, and they end up taking over this perfume company. Like, he gets a job as a secretary to this woman who owns a perfume company in France. And it's just really funny, and all these, like, the Charlie Ruggles, I think his name is. He's in another one of my movies. Charles Ruggles. He's one of the side characters. And it's just these fun little moments between the pickpocket and the thief, and then the pickpocket and the woman who runs the perfumery, and then her suitors who are both hate each other. It's such a fun movie.
Yeah.
But it's hard to follow because it's like, all right, so is he in love with the pickpocket still, or does he like the perfume lady, or what's going on? And the pickpocket kind of disappears halfway through. Like, she's just not really there for the middle of the movie. It's like, oh, yeah, never mind.
We don't need him.
We'll just pay attention to him and her. Him and the woman who runs the perfumery. Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Good. And then, okay, so again, screwball comedy, Bringing Up Baby. Ooh. I love Bringing Up Baby, but it was just, I feel like if we do a screwball comedy, I'm spoiling my list, but that's going to be on my list. Amelie.
Yes.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this for the world. I really, really love You've Got Mail.
Yeah, I do too.
Adam's like, I tell people my favorite movie's Red Dawn.
but it's really You've Got Mail. I bought this movie for my mom for Mother's Day 1 year, and I have it still.
You never gave it to her?
No, I gave it to her, but I took
you
it.
You took that.
I took it when I moved out.
That's a classic, like, I do that all the time. I give my parents, like, movies for, like,
well, they gifts. Never watch them.
I know. Yeah.
My dad's copy of King Kong, which I gave him, like, back when it first came out on DVD, the Peter Jackson version, still in its plastic, unopened. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's really good.
See, the trick is, what's the buffering time for you to take it back? I say it's 6 months.
I didn't move out for a while after I gave it to her. And I was the one watching it the most, so.
I think it's better than Sleepless in Seattle.
I do. I thought I was alone in that, but I was never being with Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah, I like You've Got Mail better, too.
They're never in scenes together. That drives me crazy about Sleepless in Seattle. Missing boats in the night. It's like you have Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. You're not going to put them in any scenes together?
I know.
Like, let them talk.
They've got the interactions. The catty interactions in this one, which are so much more fun to watch.
Much more fun. Oh, yeah. I agree.
And then I just love that Dave Chappelle's randomly in this movie.
Yeah.
That's right.
I always forget about that.
Okay. And then there's this movie, Claudine, which is from 1974. And it's billed as a romantic comedy, but it's the most sobering romantic comedy I've ever seen in my entire life. It's an all-black cast. It's James Earl Jones and Diane Carroll. And it's just this very bittersweet, like, it's a romantic comedy, but it's a lot about welfare also and the problems with welfare.
Wow.
So it didn't quite make the cut just because it's not as funny as other movies. I think that's about it. Yeah. Crazy Stupid Love, Apartment.
Yeah.
Oh, Notting Hill. Did we say that?
No, we briefly talked. We
I like Notting Hill.
Yeah.
I love Notting Hill.
About a boy.
Yeah. I love Hugh Grant. Yeah. And most
there's these
comedies.
French movies. It's a sequel. It's The Spanish Apartment and Russian Dolls. They're both really funny.
Russian Dolls, I've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you? It's a sequel. Okay,
yeah.
So you saw both of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Notting Hill, there's a scene where his roommate, what's his name? Griffin.
Reese Evans.
Yeah.
What is he eating? And he's like, oh,
sour cream.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, there's something wrong with this yogurt. because it's sour cream.
Oh, okay.
And he keeps eating it.
That's it.
I love the supporting cast in that. I love all of his friends. They're so great, you know. And
Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yes.
So okay, I stopped. That's
okay.
It. I cut myself off.
Done. So again, six month rule. June 1st.
June 1st in New York. June 8th in LA, and then it's rolling out the rest of the summer. So keep an eye out for it.
And check out the website at
6monthrulemovie.com.
Follow it on Twitter.
At 6 month rule.
Yeah.
And then Blaine's on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm on Twitter, Blaine Weaver, with a Y. Don't misspell my name.
Come on, guys.
Yeah. So Blaine, Blaine Weaver with a Y on Twitter, and then you can find me Ricardo with an I, Ricardo ULTRERES on Twitter.
I'm at Jenee, JeHNEIGH.
I'm at Adam Scott, no Y's. It's no AN Y's. Underscore Adam Scott.
Yeah. Boom. And you
damn could, underscore.
Yeah. Damn underscore just chasing us.
Go to our website and you'll find links to everything. You'll find links to Blaine's movie, his website, the Twitter will be up there, everything. And you could also find the link to Adam Scott's blog, which is shootingthescript.com. Finally. Yeah. No,
I like how you're still saying spot. Finally. It's been like a month.
I know. It's just, I'm just so happy that it was like forever like blogspot dash.
Not even blog. It was WordPress, dude.
12245 dash.
You had to put in a code.
I know. Yeah. There was like direction. You couldn't get it from your home. You got to drive down the street. See, it says rip tip.
You can only check it on an Android. Yeah. That's the only way. Yeah.
Borrow somebody's Android and then log on.
I'm sorry. I just really like my Angel Fire account. Okay.
Angel Fire.
Make sure to go to the Shooting the Script Friendster.
Really?
Friendster.
Yeah, I've got a Friendster. No, I don't.
You know, we're still on MySpace.
Does Savannah know about the Friendster?
No. Don't tell her.
So, so the website is thelistfilmpodcast.com, and all the links will be there. So check us out. And if you're going to buy something on Amazon, go through our link on our website. It'll help us, you know, just in general.
Like Weather Girl and Outside Sales are both available on Amazon. There just a reminder.
There you go.
So check out and Blaine's movies.
Weather Girl and Honey 2 are both on, okay. on Instant.
Honey 2 is now on Instant?
It's on Netflix. Okay. Instant.
I don't want to bite the hand that feeds, but maybe check out Weather Girl.
Oh, yeah, no, Weather Girl. Weather Girl above all.
What if we make a drinking game out of it? Is there something that happens throughout the Honey 2 that we could make a drinking game out of?
Dancing.
Honey, dancing. Every time somebody dances. A lot. Every time somebody says something they would never say in real life.
Honey 2 is not a reflection of Blaine Weaver's filmmaking prowess.
Yeah. Savannah literally said, quoted a line from it today. I don't remember what it was, but she was just like, classic Weaver. And I'm like, can you.
Oh, wait. Oh, no. I think because she says it all the time. It's just a date. I don't want to get you pregnant or something like that.
I just want to buy you a slice of pizza. I don't want to get you pregnant.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's dialogue right from my pen, guys.
That one was actually your line.
Then. Yeah. Oh, wow. No, it wasn't.
Don't listen to him.
No, Weather Girl's great, though. I just watched it. My roommate watched it. I've seen 6 Month Rule. I really like it. Definitely.
How did you see
it? Because my girlfriend worked on the movie.
Yeah, okay. Savannah came to Shreveport, Louisiana with us on location. But you guys should come out June 8th. We'll be in L.A. and we're doing like Q&As after the Friday and Saturday Night Show. And we're drinking.
Then we should be there. Santa Monica Lemley.
Yeah, the Santa Monica Lemley.
Then nice. Saturday, we will be there then.
Do it. It'll be really fun.
Excellent. So until next time, that's it, right, guys? Anything else you guys want to plug? No?
Good.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for letting me do this. This is great.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
awesome.
You definitely
come
have an open invitation to pick any topic and come and fight us.
Awesome. Maybe when we go on video on demand, I'll come back.
Yeah.
And
Hell yeah.
Yeah. All right. Until next time, have a good week.